I chose as my destination a manageable city, Madras, now renamed Chennai. I'd heard it was less congested, more spread out, and that there were fewer high-rises than in New Delhi, Calcutta, or Bombay. It was also the first major British settlement in India. It was a natural port on the Bay of Bengal, and so the traders of the British East India Company set up base here in 1640. On this trip, I'd be on my own. I'd never been to India before. How to get around, see as much as possible. I stumbled on a solution, a private guide, an air-conditioned car and driver, all for $100 a day. Suniti Narayan was my guide.
The English is Madras, and the American English is Madras. Like, just like basket. I went to a school when the British were here, so the English that I learned was the English. So I can't say basket.
Suniti's over 60. Her granddaughter was about to have an arranged marriage. She's a devout Hindu. But there was no obvious cultural gap. I immediately felt relaxed with her. Her English was very precise. She used words I'd only read in Victorian novels, like hillock and thrice and auspicious. I introduced her to Sitaraman, the driver of my hired car, who spoke mainly in Tamil. They chatted in their language. Suniti explained they were discussing the regional government policy of changing street names from English to Tamil. We started off from a main street, Mount Road, which has a new identity. It's been renamed Anna Shalai after a local official. Suniti prefers the old name.
Mount Road. Even our chauffeur, Sitaraman, yes. He will also say Mount Road.
Yes, Mount Road. Anna Shalai is Tamil name.
Tamil and postal name.
Postal name. But and Mount Road is his old name.
Which one do you prefer?
I like Mount Road.
Suniti's been working with tourists for most of her adult life. She was the first government-accredited female guide in Madras 40 years ago. Since I'd contacted her in advance, she'd had time to work out an itinerary. We drove through cobbled streets of the business district in an area known from colonial times as the Evening Bazaar.
Behind the shops, in early days of the East India Company, was the place where the Indian merchants lived and who had trade connections with the British merchants. The Indians were were darker in complexion compared to the British people. So the British called this part the Black Town. And the name was changed to Georgetown after the visit of George V.
Thank goodness.
Look at this old building on the left. You see, this is an old colonial building. Isn't it charming?
This one was the residence of a Mr. Hall. Nobody knows what he did. And it's on Hall's Road. Now it's home to state administration offices.
Just imagine this place as a residence. A pool of water. Steps leading to the waterside. And they must have thrown quite a few parties. They lived in style.
Mm. Can we step outside?
Oh yes, you could.
The building wasn't open to the public, but Suniti talked her way inside. Not difficult in this courteous and hospitable city. The offices were dimly lit, with desks and manual typewriters and noisy fans and dusty floors. The timbered teak ceilings caught my interest. Suniti said that was termite-proof. We went out into the garden, which was a mix of British flower beds and exotic jackfruit and custard apple trees. We looked up at the facade of the house, which, though familiar in style, was painted a bright sea green and red.
The high ceiling, big rooms, good ventilation. Remember, there was no electricity when these were built. No fans. There were only these punkahs.
Punkah. P-U-N-K-A-H. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, is Hindi in origin, and the word dates back to 1807.
Punkah, like a fan. A kind of a suspended screen, which would have a pulley system and a rope that could be manipulated.
Would they pull them themselves? Or would
No, there would be servants to do it. There'll be servants outside on the verandas,
That's why the verandas.
And the servants would be outside.
Outside, either sitting or standing, sometimes sleeping, but automatically the hand would go up and down. You see?
There was a photo of punkers in a church I visited. The caretaker of St. Andrew's Kirk, the old Scottish name for church, explained punkers had been replaced by electric fans. The ceiling of the kirk is star-spangled. The stars are in the constellations you'd see in the night sky in Scotland. So worshippers, as they knelt down to pray, wouldn't feel homesick. The hymn, obligingly sung by Suniti, along with a stonemason who got down a ladder to join in, and the church caretaker, is in Tamil, but is obviously in the tradition of Western ecclesiastical music. That's Anglo-Indian culture for you. As is common in British churches, there were tombstones along the sides of the church.
In memoriam, Lionel Langley, Major Royal Engineers, aged 40 years, who died at Kullar in the Krishna district on the 18th April 1890 from injuries received in an encounter with a tiger.
An encounter with a tiger? Hunting tigers used to be a colonial nighttime sport. Officials were joined by local Indian aristocracy, and they made this a grand social pastime. But don't worry, tigers are all in reservations now. Although there is other exotic wildlife to be found, even in the city.
Jackals, mongoose, and giant lizards, cobras, and other snakes.
Conrad Jameson from New Zealand and his English wife live and work in a compound on the outskirts of Chennai. It's owned by a spiritual society which was established in the 19th century to introduce Eastern religion to Britain. The property has a good deal of jungly vegetation. Conrad and his wife are both 80, tanned, and 6 foot tall. They have a regal bearing as they march in flimsy sandals down an overgrown path to the sea. This area is dangerous for swimmers.
There have been fisher boys caught up here with the sharks, of course, as natural, because they just live on a little, well, it's hardly a canoe, some of them. They're just a few boards put together. They come along here, the fishermen, with their little flat-bottom boats, and they have a little net they throw out. Then they bang on the water with their paddles.
Not all of colonial life was dangerous. There was obvious luxury. I went to have a traditional breakfast of eggs and smoked kippers at the Connemara Hotel, named after a popular governor general at the turn of the century. The building's been altered, but the entrance is still grand. It used to have a portico held up by 12 pillars so guests could arrive on elephants. Inside, there are sepia photos on display of British officials partying here with the Indian aristocracy. In those days, from the founding of the hotel in 1889 to Indian independence in 1947, each guest was allotted a personal servant known as a bearer, who started work at sunrise, bringing guests their morning tea.
Bed tea was a must for them.
What is bed tea? I've never heard of this.
They have their bed tea. The bearer has to take it to them in their room before they ever come and have breakfast.
So what time would this?
That'll be in the morning, about 6:30.
And what did bed tea consist of?
It'll consist of tea and toast. And then they will have their normal breakfast, which we had timings for breakfast. It used to be from 8:30 to 10.
Then you got the personal bearer thrown in with the daily tariff. Alas, no longer. But the hotel still has some huge colonial-style rooms from $160 a night. Because of those exceptionally hearty breakfasts, the British in India invented a new name for a light lunch, tiffin. Suniti took me to an Anglo-Indian school where I found kids having recess in a playground by the roadside. They were running in ragtag uniform, and many were in bare feet. It was tiffin time, they told me, in a cacophonous hodgepodge of English and Tamil.
Called as tiffin box. What does that mean? When you bring the lunch, no. The box is called tiffin box. And what is your lunch? Rice.
What else?
Sambar sadam.
Are you going to play cricket with that?
Yes. I'm going to play cricket.
What's your name?
Give me your name.
Christopher. Saninaya tingal mandum yenre.
Though they sing Tamil movie songs, these children study British history. There's a statue of Queen Victoria down the road from their school. It's not much different from when Suniti was in the classroom. She has a good memory, especially for music and this song. If you want to find Colonial Madras, go soon. The name change to Chennai announces a new phase in the city's history and self-definition. The city's modernizing, and many of the old buildings are being pulled down for multi-story apartments and offices. But if you look carefully, the residue of colonial culture and the fascinating way it's been grafted onto the fabric of South Indian life will be there for you.
God save our king.
Or queen, as if
In Chennai, this is Judith Kempner for The Savvy Traveller.